National Native American Heritage Month is celebrated to recognize the history, culture, and contributions of indigenous people in the United States. A part of that culture that often gets overlooked is now being celebrated by the Indigenous Fashion Collective. The group recently held their own Indigenous Met Gala to celebrate their culture and creativity. And in Orange County, a free clinic is adding a potentially life-saving feature. The Lestana Clinic will be opening a surgery center next year. And for those facing eviction, the Mayor's Fund can be their saving grace. Over the past year, the group has kept tens of thousands of renters from losing their homes. We explain how a partnership with landlords is helping both parties. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. If you ask most Angelenos what are the biggest problems LA faces, you're likely to find homelessness in the top three, maybe even number one. And every day, more people lose their homes or are at risk of losing them from job loss, illness, hardship, and just the increasing cost of living. But losing your residence isn't just a struggle for the displaced. It's a crisis in general for society. And that's where the Mayor's Fund for Los Angeles comes in. The group works in a multitude of ways to keep people housed. Conway Collis is the president and CEO of the Mayor's Fund. Good to see you, Conway. Thanks for being with us. And many people only heard about the Mayor's Fund during COVID from Mayor Garcetti, but it's been around for a little bit. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, Hal, first of all, thank you for helping to focus on this issue.
You're welcome.
You know, I think there has to be a realization that this is like an earthquake that's hit in LA every single day, including today. And that's why when Mayor Bass became mayor and I took over the Mayor's Fund, we focused totally, refocused the Mayor's Fund totally on homelessness prevention. Look at it. The mayor working with the council and the supervisors, since she's been mayor, over 21,000 people have been moved off the streets. The problem is thousands of people have become homeless during that same period. So we're totally focused on addressing it. And the way we do it is, we reach out to people who are at risk of eviction, risk of becoming homeless, and we connect them, our caseworkers connect them to all of the benefits and services and supports that they might be eligible for, which, by the way, whether it's health care or child care or tax credits, they can be leaving hundreds, even thousands of dollars on the table. So we connect them to what they're eligible for, and we connect them to legal services.
How does that differ from what Mayor Garcetti was doing?
Because there's been now the focus on actually preventing people before they become homeless. And one thing that's different is that the caseworkers now will do an assessment, and we've had, we've actually prevented in the last 6 months about 45,000 people, at least stabilized them, to do the preventive work so they're not in the situation of becoming homeless. But at the same token, 15,000 people have called our hotline to say they're at immediate risk of eviction. So we connect them, and this is different, to legal services where they're actually going to get an attorney to represent them. But one key is, you know, landlords generally aren't the enemy. I mean, as the mayor says, we all got to link arms. We're all in this together. And there are a lot of landlords. This is their mom and pops. This is their retirement. We had one landlord come to us, Sola Housing, and say, look, we've got 3,500 units in the city, and we've got a number of our tenants are subject to eviction. Can we work together and help them? So we came in. We connected them to all the things they're eligible for, all the revenue. The city's Family Source Centers came in, did financial education. Sola Housing forgave the back rent for over 20 of their tenants, put in over $130,000 to do it. So it was obviously the right thing to do. It also made sense for them financially, because when you try to evict somebody, it's going to take 6 months, 8 months, a year. You're not getting any rent during that period. Through another partnership with Better Angels, we can hook people up to no interest loans of $2,500, up to $2,500. That can be offered to a landlord to say, look, this is a lot less than what they owe, but you're going to get it right now, and you're going to get a stable tenant.
One thing I want to understand, and you and I talked about this a little bit right before we started the show, homelessness has been around forever. I go back to the early 80s where we called people street people. We didn't call them unhoused. We didn't call them homeless. And we had more back then, and yet every time we throw money at it, it doesn't seem like it goes away. Can you address that for a second?
Absolutely. Because I think a major difference with when Karen Bass became mayor, it's now being addressed in a comprehensive way. We can't just do one thing. It's got to be comprehensive. So we're leading the prevention effort. The mayor and working with others is moving people from the streets into housing with services, mental health, substance abuse, and building a hell of a lot more housing in a hell of a lot of ways. We need all those things.
Around here, we call it hell of a lot. Just so you know. No, but there are a lot of people that might be watching right now saying, but I still see a lot of people who are unhoused underneath this bridge and over that bridge. And
so, you know, for the first time, the homeless count showed there actually was a slight reduction in the number of people on the streets. And look, this isn't going to happen overnight, but it is something that is moving in the right direction. Let me mention something else. We've got to address and help people who are most vulnerable. An example is foster youth. So we're providing the benefit and employment and housing navigation for all the 20-year-olds who are leaving foster care in the county. That's critical because most of the homeless youth in Los Angeles have been in foster care, and almost all of the people who have been sexually trafficked have been in foster care. These are our kids. So we've got to right now, about 250 of them are leaving the system without a place to live. We're addressing that too. So I think that with the mayor pulling together, getting people to link arms, pulling people together to work together, it's not going to be immediate, but we know what to do. It's not brain surgery. We got to keep at it, and we got to do it in a comprehensive way.
All right. Conway Collis, thanks so much for joining us with the Mayor's Fund. And we'll have you back here to update this in a while and let us know exactly what progress you're continuing to make. Right. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, for the first time, a surgical center is being built inside a free clinic, providing everything from colonoscopies to eye surgeries. The surgical center will make a difference in the lives of patients with nowhere else to go. We'll take a look right after this break. Don't go away. Medical insurance coverage for Americans remains spotty at best, and for many uninsured people, the free clinic is their best bet for care. Now, a local free clinic is expanding its services to include outpatient surgeries. It's the first free clinic in the entire country to do this. Edward Gerber is executive director of Lestinac Free Clinic. I said that right, didn't I?
You said it right.
Lestinac Free Clinic. Good to see you. Thanks for being here. First of all, tell us a little bit about the Lestinac Free Clinic, and tell us, I think I'm right, it's been around for more than 40 years.
45 years. We've been around for 45 years. We started in 1979 as we saw a need for the uninsured to get help. So in the beginning, we had just two little rooms and some doctors that would volunteer their time. And over the years, we've turned into 12 different locations throughout three different counties. Last year, we treated over 12,000 individuals with 36,000 visits.
Now, one of the things we talked about in the green room before we came here in the studio was the notion that there are a lot of people that don't have the Affordable Care Act, they don't have work insurance, they're underinsured, or they just are out of luck.
Correct.
Talk about that.
So, and that presents such a problem, and I'm one of them. I started that way at the clinic 33 years ago. My first experience at the clinic was being uninsured and not knowing where to go to get help, and the clinic was there to help me. So a lot of the problems within the community, especially in Orange County, is that there's no county hospital. So there's nowhere they can go if they have any serious illnesses. And because of the different costs of health care, it becomes very challenging for people to go find a doctor, and where are they going to go? So they can't afford the the copays. Some of the people that have insurance can't afford the copays to even go see the doctors. And then if you make too much money, Medi-Cal isn't free, so there's a share of costs. So becomes challenging for that as well.
Yeah, there was a county hospital at one time. It's where UCI is now, right?
Correct, right. And that is, God, that's been about 30-some years that went away.
And so are there a lot of people that need the services that you're providing on the surgical level?
Yeah, so right now we have about 3,000 individuals waiting on a wait list to get surgeries. And those are colonoscopies, endoscopies, and other surgeries that have been waiting for a long time that we try our best to be able to do that. So, you know, we were in the past doing surgeries twice a month and doing some of these surgeries free of charge at a outpatient surgery center in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, it's free of charge to the patient.
To the patient,
but there's money involved here. Where does that money come from?
Well, there's not much money involved.
But it does cost for these things.
And it's all through private donations. So there's no taxpayer dollars involved in this. There's no hidden fees inside of here. These are doctors. So the actual cost, as you write, is the doctor who donates his time. So the doctor, we're not paying for the physician. These are board certified physicians that, you know, they know what they're doing.
But there are a lot of people that might come over there and say, well, if I can maybe get a free service, I don't need to go pay the doctor. But they can't do that.
They can't. So any surgery being provided by us would have to be referred through a community clinic, and they would have to show that they're low income and they're either uninsured or uninsured before they get.
Why is it, since California law requires hospitals to treat poor patients, why is it that you're needed for this?
Well, the state of California, they have to treat somebody. So if you have to go into the emergency room, they have to make sure that you're not going to die. You know, they have to make sure that you're stable when you leave. But that's not healthcare. That's just dealing with issues one at a time, and it's not providing a long-term solution. It's not providing care for chronic care. It's not even doing episodic care. That's just stabilizing to make sure that you're not going to go away and walk out the door and drop over.
Would you like to talk about the angel donor that you have here?
I would. So the Thompson Family Foundation was very generous enough to give us a multi-million dollar donation to be able to build the surgery center. So we're going to have the surgery center built, and that surgery center will come to us free of charge. So there's no cost. We're not paying off any debt. There's no cost to us. So the cost now to do the surgeries is minimal because, again, the doctors volunteer their time, the anesthesiologists volunteer their time, and the nurses volunteer their time.
But to be clear, it's not open yet.
It's not open
yet. When's it going to open?
We hope to open in the first quarter of next year. So sometime around February or March, we hope to have the clinic open, get it credentialed and ready to go as fast as we possibly can.
You have a dozen centers around Orange County?
Orange County, yeah. Riverside, and L.A. County, yeah.
So people will be referred from, say, a Riverside clinic over to this?
Correct.
And so how does one end up getting scheduled for surgery?
So we have a system called CRN, Community Referral Network. And that's not just our clinic. So we take referrals from other community clinics throughout the three counties. So if you go into a community clinic that you're familiar with and you find out that you need a colonoscopy or an endoscopy, they can put you through CRN into us, and then we'll contact you and set up the arrangements.
You may not be able to answer this any more than you can tell me what the lottery numbers are for tonight, but do you think this one center is going to be enough, or do you think you're going to have more of these surgical centers?
Well, I think, especially in Orange County, it's a challenge because of the No County Hospital, but it's yet to be found out. I don't know. We
don't
know.
Only time will tell.
That's it. But I know that when we were doing it, work in partnership with Alapio and other organizations, the twice a month wasn't enough because our list of patients growing on the wait list was greater than we were able to take care of. So that list was growing and growing. So by doing this, and the Thompsons realizing that fact, gave us the money so that we could try to stop the wait list.
And if people want to donate, how do they do that?
So we have a donation spot on our website at www.lestinacfreeclinic.org.
All right, one more time.
www.lestinac, L-E-S-T-O-N-N-A-C, freeclinic.org.
All right, very good. Thanks so much, Thank Edward. You. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, the indigenous fashion movement is just getting off the ground, but it's gaining traction and allowing more people to enjoy Native American culture and art, and we'll be right back with that. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. The Indigenous Fashion Collective hosted a gala in Los Angeles to spotlight Native designers, models, and entrepreneurs. The organization was co-founded by Sarah Eaglehart, and Sarah joins us now along with actress model Quanah Chasinghorse. Quanah's been featured on the cover of many magazines, and most of them fashion magazines, as I remember, and worked on top global fashion houses. And welcome to both of you. So glad to have you here. And Sarah, tell us a little bit about the Indigenous Fashion Collective that you guys have started.
Sure. The Indigenous Fashion Collective was actually co-founded by myself, Twyla True, and Lillian Sparks Robinson earlier this year in March. Mm-hmm. And we had this big idea that we really wanted to create a membership-based organization very similar to the Council on Fashion Designers of America, but one that could be inclusive, not only support Native designers, models, and photographers, but also educate non-Native brands and other organizations about Indigenous peoples.
Well, this is such a significant thing that you guys are doing. I mean, you have been to the Met Gala, what, the last 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And did you feel like something was missing?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we have this.
Exactly.
And tell me a little bit about the Indigenous fashions. And I think we're looking at some of this on the screen right now.
Yeah. I honestly am so honored to even be a part of it. We've been wanting to do this for so long, and I'm really honored to be a part of this beautiful thing with a bunch of incredible Native women that are doing incredible things for our people and in fashion. We got a bunch of Native designers to dress, models, actresses, just people that are significant within our communities to kind of mimic, you know, a Met Gala, but we wanted to create our own. So that's how I kind of got involved. I've been, you know, helping these models and designers kind of connect, and I've been doing like model workshops and helping young Native models that want to, you know, enter that space by giving them some of the knowledge that I've learned.
And for transparency, I've known Quanah for quite a while, and so we've talked many times before. And Sarah, tell me a little bit about how fashion for the Indigenous creatives is different than what we see in regular fashion shows.
Well, Indigenous peoples, we have a long history of obviously craftsmanship and artistry, you know, whether it's the beautiful jewelry that we see or the top that
we're
wearing.
And I love turquoise, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and this top is actually done by Tira Alicia from Vividius, but they are now, it's just such a hot topic within the Native community. I think Quanah was a big inspiration for that, being at Vogue and actually going to the Met Gala. You know, we also wanted to create this space where we could pass down knowledge, and I think that's something mm-hmm. that is so special. And even Taboo, who co-chaired the event for us last month, there's also something about Native people just really wanting to pass down their knowledge, and I think that that's so special and just really important.
Do you have some famous designers that you like?
In the Native community, yes.
Yeah.
Patricia Michaels is an amazing Taos Puebla woman who she created a beautiful dress that was actually at Cannes Film Festival. It's an eagle feather dress, and I just love the stories that she tells about this eagle feather and using a male headdress and turning it around and flipping it, making it a big, beautiful skirt. And so Indigenous peoples are really telling their stories through fashion, and I think that's what's so beautiful about what's happening now.
Is it fair to say, Quanah, that some of the inspiration is from one's own culture?
Yeah, for sure. There are, you know, designers that really tap into specific, you know, cultures and specific tribes, usually their own tribes. And I think it's really beautiful because it shows the world that we are not a monolith, that we're all not the same. And we all speak different languages, we all practice different things, yet we live by the same values, which is taking care of each other, being in community, and really making sure that we're doing our part within the environmental justice world.
I love the jewelry, and I do. I love the earrings. And this is called, your tattoo on your chin is called a Yadiltu?
Yadiltu.
And yeah. And so tell me what that is.
So the word Yadiltu actually just means like tattoo and like the practice of tattooing. But clearly I have markings on my face and on my body. And
so does your mom.
And so does my mom. Yeah. We are traditional tattoo artists. And in the fashion world, there is like no models that are native that have these markings and have graced them on covers of magazines and whatnot. And, you know, it has been something that has been so demonized and so like taken from our people and created this whole narrative that it was evil. But it's beautiful. And it was actually a form of identifying one another from each other's tribes, because each culture that did tattooing did them differently and had different markings for different reasons or same reasons.
Right.
But for me, it's just an honor to be within these spaces so that I can show the world that we're not all the same and that we're still here and that, you know, we're proud to be here, and I'm not gonna, you know, like make myself small to fit, you know, these Eurocentric beauty standards, because I don't fit that, but we are creating our own beauty standards.
And we only have like about a half minute left, but would you do me a favor and tell us a little bit about the Met Gala? Because that was a big deal for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, we held our own, just quote, Indigenous Met Gala. It was the Indigenous Fashion Collective Gala at the Autry last month. We plan on doing it next year. We wanted to celebrate, the Indigenous Fashion Collective celebrates culture, couture, collaboration, and creativity. And so it was important for us to put Indigenous fashion on its own spotlight and its mm-hmm. own stage. So we look forward to doing it this coming year as well.
Maybe it'll become an annual thing every year, maybe?
Oh, it will.
Yes. Oh, yes. It will? Okay, great.
Yes, it will.
All right. Sarah, Quanah, thank you so much. And Fox 11 News In Depth will continue right after this break. Don't go away. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hell, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehellpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.